This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I am your host, Damon Hatfield. I'm joined today by Greg Miller.
Hey, Damon.
Colin Moriarty is here. And Andrew Goldfarb is also here.
Back in the chair.
Gamescom 2012 is underway in Germany. You'll get there again. Today,
I was slow.
You seeded it to Colin.
That's true.
That's all.
Well,
you
seniority.
Even, yeah.
Been here about 4 years longer than you, so I'm
that's
getting
it. I deserve it.
So I'm getting the couch.
He's earned this. Greg, you and I went to Gamescom together once.
Yeah, we did, yeah, that was a fun time.
Colin and I, you and I went to Gamescom together.
It was a hell of a time. We smoked Cuban cigars.
We did. With the fans, actually.
Yeah.
It's such a good time. Yeah. What if all three of us were in Germany together for Gamescom?
I would be unhappy, usually, probably.
You don't like to travel internationally.
International
anymore.
Travel, not my favorite. I like Japan a lot. It was one of those things, like, Japan, we turned it around, because we went there and you told me to live the Damon Hatfield lifestyle, and I was all right.
It's the Damon Hatfield lifestyle, ladies and gentlemen.
In Germany, I did not live the Damon Hatfield lifestyle. I was not as happy. And I remember the story to show you how bitter I was in Germany. These beautiful girls, like, they're 20, Colin, they come walking up with cake, and they're like, "We want to buy some cake?" And I'm like, "No!" And I walk right past them.
They were trying
to get married. They were trying to get...
She was raising money for her wedding, and she was selling pastries on the street. And I was like, sure,
I'll buy a pastry. I'm all mean, and I'm like, "No!" And I steamroll right through the middle of them, and Damon stops and buys the cake, so I have to walk back all sheepishly.
I had a surprisingly great time in Germany.
No, you did. Was Japan your last international trip?
Yeah. That was a while ago.
It's about time again.
That
was like 2008. Yeah. So yeah, that was a long time.
The old Mark Bozon train. We were over there eating the ramen. He ate the horse flesh. Eric Brezig was there too.
Bozon.
Doesn't ring a bell?
Bozon. No, doesn't ring a bell. Anyway, this year's game. What do you have to say, Andrew?
No, I would love to go international. That's all I'm saying. I went to LA.
I'm going full.
You'd love to go to SF Supco right now. You just want to go anywhere you can go. You
is there a location? The SF Supco location?
There is in Cologne. It's inside the Dom. I think.
Thank goodness. The historical location.
Sony held a press conference just today.
Sony didn't hold a press conference. They dominated Gamescom.
Really? It's over now?
Yeah. I'm proofreading an article right now from Mitch saying that Sony won before it even started.
Okay.
I don't know how he knew that it won.
To be fair, Sony does not have a lot of competition this year.
Yeah, Microsoft not caring.
Sure. Neither Microsoft nor Nintendo are there. And then big names like THQ, Sega... other third-party names aren't there. There's just Sony.
Big names, like the always in the news for financial trouble, THQ and Sega.
You're saying that they're just not a big name?
When you walk around, you just have your pockets pulled out and you look like this, probably not going to Gamescom.
Capcom was there, EA.
Darksiders 2 is out today. That's a THQ.
That's true.
Yeah. Let's hope that one sells well. Otherwise, we won't be talking about THQ too much.
Some people like that game.
Yeah.
Have you played
Are you one of them?
I played the beginning of it at E3, but I'm going to start it later.
Yeah, you haven't really played that.
Goldfarb, jeez.
Anyway, the announcements, Sony had a bunch of announcements
at
its press conference today. Where to begin? How about with Until Dawn? What is Until Dawn?
New
Got
game.
A girl in a bra.
Yeah. About a girl in a bra.
Yeah. Did you watch it? Did you catch the trailer?
On board. No, I haven't.
You. This is your game. Yes. Now here's
this one.
Now hold on a second, because I'm gonna tell you something, and you're immediately gonna go, ugh, no, it's not your game. It's a PlayStation Move game. Stick with me. Don't go yet. Okay. But it's a horror movie PlayStation Move game. The movie
so
is
it's like
gonna
Rise of Nightmares.
I hope not. I hope not. Because this looks like a real like there are all these like teens going to a cabin. There's a girl in a bikini who she wants to have sex with a guy, and they're saying all these stupid things. Like, we're gonna get drinking in here. We're gonna have the sex in here. I don't remember the.
This is where we drink.
I don't remember the direct quotes, but that's what they're driving at. But then you use the you're using it as a flashlight, the PlayStation Move, in this creepy cabin, this creepy wooded area and stuff.
It looks cool.
Yeah, it's definitely a cool idea. But that was my thing. I tweeted how I was excited for it based on that, and then I hit send, and then I immediately followed up with, I hope it's not Rise of the Nightmares.
It looked a little Alan Wakey when he was in the dark with the flashlight. I believe that's an official adjective.
Okay, so a horror game that uses PlayStation Move.
Yeah.
Flashlight. All right, so it's playable at Gamescom. Mm-hmm. So either Mitch or Charles, the Raging Canadian. Or Keza, we'll check it out and play it, and hopefully they'll have more to report on that one.
It's been in development for a long time, I assume that.
Yeah, long rumored, you described it in your news story.
Yeah, people have been talking about this game. The name of this game has been floating around for several years. So
and this is one of the URLs that got out.
Yeah, I wrote about it just a week or two ago about the trademark being renewed for the game, too, and Rain, so they basically gave away those two things if you pay close attention.
It's crazy how many of those rumors ended up being right. Like, it was two
Who
games
thought
from
Sony
Studio
couldn't
Japan.
Keep secrets?
For once, something leaked out, David.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned Rain. This is another game that was just announced today for PlayStation Network.
Yeah. It's beautiful, also.
It's beautiful?
I think this one's interesting. It looks like it's a little puzzler game or whatever. You're a boy. You are invisible. You're after this girl. And the only way you're seen
another
now
girl
is when,
game.
Yeah, well, they know what the boys like, Damon. Chasing them girls.
Well, as we all know, only boys play video games.
Only boys. Yeah. I'm waiting for boyfriend mode. Anyways.
That's just every video game, right?
Yeah. The main mode is boyfriend mode in every video game. Anyways, you're a boy, you're invisible. As you walk around, the rain falls on you, and you get to see your silhouette, but you also get to see some creatures in the world silhouettes, too. Probably enemies, probably going to chase you down and eat your face. But you walk around, it looks like you're platforming, pushing stuff around. What am I forgetting, Colin?
I don't know, Sony Japan's making it, though, so it has a chance it won't even come out.
6 years from now, we'll still be talking about Rain.
What's the other one, Black Swan?
Oh, the unfinished one?
Unfinished one.
But that's not Sony Japan.
I know, but I'm thinking of it as an artistic PlayStation Network game.
Yep.
Sure. PlayStation Network, that's their whole thing, right? They're going for like these boutique titles that are, speaking to interesting people.
Is Rain like 3D game?
That's the official slogan.
I feel like that. I got a little bit
ahead. Boutique titles speaking to interesting people.
I got a bit ahead of myself on that one. I was in the sentence before I knew where the destination was. That's all I could come up with. Interesting people.
Oh, I hope that's the official tagline that they start using.
Yeah.
Rain is a 3D game?
Yeah.
You would control it as a normal, 3D, third-person action game.
Hard to say from the little bit of trailer we saw, because we're writing the news,
paint
looking at the trailer.
For our listeners.
What it looked to me was like it's going to be a fixed camera angle for different parts of the level you're in. So you'd walk into one side, and then you're like moving a box or doing something like this, maybe a little bit elevated from over here at the one part when you're walking around, you saw the creatures over here and there. So there you go. That's the picture I'm painting.
Okay.
You said it was beautiful. How do you describe the graphics?
I'm not saying it's beautiful graphically in the way that like Uncharted 3 is beautiful graphically, but I just meant like the art style is really cool.
Yeah.
It's like, it seems very like totally spot on. It reminds me of like Unfinished Swan or Journey or Flower or any of the other like really creative PlayStation Network games.
Mm-hmm. Boutique titles for interesting people.
exactly.
And then what is Puppeteer?
Puppeteer is Mike Pereira's most anticipated game
of the game. Show.
He got so excited.
The game looks great. Unfortunate name.
Yeah.
Why?
Name's not
because it makes it seem like it's like a PlayStation Move or casual game.
So it's just not.
I don't think it is. I mean, from what I was like, I don't know what the exact details of the game. From what I was looking at, it looks like a pretty hardcore 2D side-scrolling action game.
Yeah, it looks really cool.
So it all takes place on a stage.
Let's see if I can get this right. It takes place on a stage. You play as a boy named Kutro, who has been turned into a wooden boy, and his head has been knocked off. Now he can replace his head with other objects. Also, he's looking for a pair of magical scissors to take down. This is all true. The Moon Bear King. Yeah.
Okay. It's starting to sound like Sony's doing some weird stuff.
Boutique titles for interesting people.
And this one's also Studio Japan, we should say.
Yeah. PlayStation Network?
It looks like
retail?
It looks like a PlayStation Network game to me. I hope that's not a retail game.
I was thinking it looked like a retail game.
Really?
Yeah, it's kind of struck me as it might be retail too. Yeah.
Oh. We'll see. I mean, it kind of looks like, aesthetically looks a little bit like Little Big Planet to me.
Yeah, totally.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
And that was the interesting thing about Media Molecule coming out and showing their new game. Even that kind of seemed like, oh, this could be.
Yeah, what was their new game? Tearaway.
Tearaway. Yeah. Vita exclusive. So not surprising, actually. You kind of knew that the first parties must be working on Vita games.
Yeah, you hope so. Gotta play something on that thing. Yeah.
It is kind of weird, just to ignore this whole new thread of conversation and go back to Puppeteer for a second. It's weird that they announced two Studio Japan games and didn't even say, like, they're also working on Last Guardian, don't you
worry. Last Guardian's not coming.
They abandoned Last Guardian.
No way. True. We will never play Last Guardian.
My prediction about the Last Guardian is that it's no longer called the Last Guardian, it's no longer on PlayStation 3, and if we see it at all, it'll be a PS4 game.
Wow.
And it'll maybe be downloadable and no one will care about it. I mean, I don't know how anyone could possibly care about this game anymore. It's clearly
Caleb Lawson does.
It's clearly effed.
What a surprise.
What's the new name?
Puppeteer.
A Boy and His Bird Dog?
Yeah, a boy.
Bird Doggin'.
Something abstract. I mean, like I said a million times and beyond, Team Ico hasn't put out a game the entire generation. Mm-hmm. The entire generation. The entire Uncharted trilogy plus The Last of Us will have come out before in the time it's taken this game to be in development. So just marinating on that. Gold Farm. Yeah,
there will be 100 Wonder Book titles before The Last Guardian.
Wouldn't that be weird to be like going to work every day and working on stuff, but none of it ever coming out for, what, 6 years now?
Yep. Well, if you're doing that, I doubt you're doing much work.
So is that the reason?
There's a lot of tweeting. There's a lot of blogging.
There's a lot of interesting chatter about that game as far as like them having to basically rebuild it. It's basically the form in which we saw it when Clement saw it playable in Tokyo a couple years ago.
When they debuted the NGP.
It's not the game as it is now. Like, it's not the same game.
Yeah, remember the Next Generation Portable?
I do. Play it every day.
I think the reason the Vita hasn't been such a runaway success is because they didn't just go with the original
name. They should have stuck with NGP.
That great name, yeah.
NGP.
Anyway, Tearaway, a new game from Media Molecule. It's an adventure game. So not a user-generated content game. Or at least not based entirely around that.
Media Molecule realized there's no money in that, and they got the hell out of there.
Is that true?
No, Little Big Planet sells well. It's very popular. A lot of kids like Little Big Planet.
Yeah, well, it's disappointing, though. I'm a little disappointed with Tearaway. I mean, it looks a little abstract, which is fine, but it's not really that different, aesthetically at least, from Little Big Planet. And even mechanically, I mean, it's 3D and stuff, but it doesn't look... They said they wanted to do something else. This really isn't something else. You know, I wanted them to do something like radically different with radically different graphics and like really flex their muscles. They're one of the most talented studios in Sony stable.
Are they doing Little Big Planet Vita?
No.
They just consulted.
They're done with Little Big Planet. They stepped away.
Yeah, they said that they don't want to do it anymore.
I get that. You know, you make two games. That in itself is years and years and years of work. So you know, you want to move on.
I do think it's interesting they were like, oh, check out these like cutting edge, it's like it's a paper silhouette on the background of real, and I was like, well, that's sort of the Little Big Planet art style. Like, it struck me as weird. I agree.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm a little disappointed in it, to be honest. But I mean, it could be excellent, but I mean, I wanted something totally radically different from them, and that's not it.
Cool integration of touchscreen and stuff, though. You can poke your fingers through, and you can hop on trampolines.
it's called
your system.
It was called Little Deviant, so look what happened to Big Studios.
Touche.
They don't exist anymore.
Mr. Positivity, Colin Moriarty.
Speaking of Vita games and Vita games with touch controls, Killzone Mercenary was also announced.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That looks great.
It's a first-person shooter, not possible on any other platform.
No, yeah, I like that.
They said that twice, which I thought was funny.
Mm. So you like this one. You like this one. You're excited.
Looks pretty.
Looks good. Yeah, looks really nice. I don't care about Killzone at all, but I played, you know, Killzone 2 and 3 I beat. It doesn't really do it for me, but just having anything really on the Vita at this point is exciting. That looks, you know.
It sounds so sad. It's a cool system.
It is. It just doesn't have many games. But, you know, Guerrilla, say what you will about Guerrilla, they seem like a one-trick pony to some because of their they've only developed one game that is not a Killzone game. And this continues that trend, but it looks totally competent. When you've played the likes of Resistance Burning Skies, I think you're kind of looking for a shooter from a studio that's really good, and Guerrilla is a good studio.
Yeah. See, that's what's exciting. It's a first-person shooter, not from the people who did Resistance Burning Skies, like Call of Duty on the Vita.
Yeah, that is the megaton that I think no one's acknowledging, by the way.
So what's the problem with that one?
So, Call of Duty Black Ops Declassified.
Finally see footage of it today.
Yeah.
First time ever. And find out the single player stuff fills in. It's single player missions between Black Ops and Black Ops 2. Yep. Interesting. All right, cool. I'm on board. 4v4 Wi-Fi. All right, tell me more. Developed by...
Nihilistic Software.
Developers of...
Resistance Burning Skies.
The only other first-person shooter on the Vita that we gave a 5.5 to.
PlayStation Move Heroes. So PlayStation Move Heroes has a Metacritic score of 54. And Resistance has a Metacritic score of 60, as I wrote in my story that I just wrote before we came up here to record this. And it's just very concerning that Sony and Activision don't care enough about this game to give it to a developer that has made good games. Because no offense to those guys, they're nice guys. We know them.
Yeah, really nice guys.
But their games, they have no games like that are excellent to speak of. And you think that you'd want a great developer to make Call of Duty. That's why
it's so easy too. All they had to do was do, hey, like you can play multiplayer matches from this, and the experience you were in Ghost of Black Ops 2. Didn't even need a single player mode. It could have literally been that. It could have been Black Ops 2 multiplayer on the go, and sure, it would have sold better than this probably.
Now, but now that's to Activision's fault, not to these guys.
Sure, well, I guess that's
Call
true.
Duty sells itself, right? Like even the Wii versions of the, you know, the Call of Duty ports sell well.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing, they announced a bundle for it too. There'll be a declassified bundle with the Vita. You'll get it's got a customized back touch panel.
The part of that you never see, that you never look at.
That's all smudged up and shit.
A few more updates. Four new characters announced coming to PlayStation All-Stars. Yeah. Sackboy, Ratchet, Dante from Devil May Cry, and Spike from Ape Escape.
Just so surprising. I mean, it's great that they didn't have any leaks, that we didn't see any of this coming. That was really awesome.
We already knew about Dante?
Yeah. So these were all in that leak from beta, which is kind of crazy. But they look really cool. Like, that's kind of what I was saying when that stuff leaked out. It's still exciting finally seeing them in motion, you know, seeing like Dante's crazy combos. And like Sackboy is amazing and hilarious.
Sackboy's really, really cute.
It's really creative.
Yeah, it's... So I was telling Greg and Gold, I went to Superbot last week and I could finally talk about it or whatever. And I saw a lot and I can't talk about most of what I saw, but I can talk about these characters and the gameplay in general in All-Stars. I think people are really sleeping on this game. Like the way the developers play.
What do you mean? Because it's the most popular PlayStation 3 game on IGN.
It's all contextual though, right? I mean, like it's still not like as popular as, first of all, people love to hate this game and I think that's why a lot of people are clicking on it. But I think that if you play the beta, and I know a lot of people haven't played the beta yet, the way that people are playing the game is not the way the developers play the game. And the way the developers play the game is very strategic and very interesting and really changes the game up. And it's giving me like a new lens into how the game I think is designed to be played. Because I played it with Seth Killian and Omar Kendall and Chan Park and all these guys that are working on the game. Have been working on the game for years, like fighting OGs basically, fighting genre OGs. And it's just a really fascinating game. I really have high expectations for the game now. And I'm excited for people to learn more as time goes on. But we have exclusive videos of all these characters. We have a huge exclusive on all these
guys. Really
cool. The only site that has footage of those characters.
IGN.com.
It's cool you've got old characters like Spike from Ape Escape, and then someone totally brand new like the new Dante.
Yeah, right? That's
nice. It is the new Dante, right?
It is
Emo Dante.
Or as the negative nickname, Dino, people call him Dante, name only.
That's really dumb.
It's a forum nickname.
Okay.
What I love about it is exactly what you just said. This blends. What's so cool about PlayStation All-Stars is that it's paying tribute to the history of the PlayStation brand, but it's also about the current PlayStation brand. So it's like, you know, some people are saying it's like a marketing tool that they're putting in third-party characters, but I don't see it as that at all. I see it as an awesome legacy thing where it's like, right now, Devil May Cry and Tekken Tag Tournament 2 and, you know, Bioshock Infinite are coming, so why not have crossover characters? I think it's smart.
Yeah, I know that a lot of people aren't too hot on this... this character being in the game, or at least this version of Dante, but the way he plays is actually really interesting.
Seems really cool, yeah.
Yeah, and I think people are gonna be surprised about how he plays. He's basically combo based. Like as Goldfarb has pointed out, like some of the characters in the game carry over their combos and like the button mashing and stuff from the original game, like Kratos does.
Yeah.
And Dante is a similar character where you're kind of reacting and using combos. He plays unlike any other character in the game, which is really cool. So
also announced today was that it will feature cross-buy. Which is a
new
feature.
Great. They
Sony's finally like, wait, we've been forgetting something with this Vita. All right.
PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale is coming to both PlayStation 3 and Vita, and so the cross-buy system means if you buy it on PS3, you get the Vita version for free.
Right.
Is it disappointing that it doesn't work the other way?
Yeah, did they say that implicitly? Because
I wrote based on what they said at the thing, and that's how they described it.
That's interesting because, I don't know. I mean, it is a little weird. I assume the PS3 version will just come with a voucher
that
you will download the game with, and maybe it's just not, possible logistically for them to do it with the Vita. I don't know.
See, you say I think it's the same way. Either no matter how you get it, I think it's the exact same way, right? I mean, I guess the thing would be that you'd get a voucher code. So if you had a small memory stick on your Vita, you want the game card version of it, but it's still the same thing, right?
It would have to be $60.
Well, that's
buy
the thing.
Vita
how much is the Vita version going to cost?
Because
the retail version will cost $60. We have to assume, right?
Yeah, Uncharted was the most expensive game, and it was $50. So you'd assume that it would be.
But if it's the same exact game, why would you pay less? Why wouldn't you pay less for it? You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
so
a good point.
I understand is the problem.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. I mean, I don't know. I don't think the things that I think about the game people are going to care. Like, Superbot's not developing the Vita version of the game. We don't really know how, we've only played it like briefly at E3. Yeah. We haven't really seen it since, so maybe it's the fidelity of the game might be different. I don't know. Bluepoint's developing it. So,
Investigate this, Greg.
Okay. Well, it's also, remember, it's also working for other games. Sly Cooper.
Okay.
Ratchet, which they announced. Yeah, full frontal slot is coming.
It's exciting that Ratchet's coming to Vita.
Yeah.
Because that's like a tower defense game, basically, right? So.
Is it a new Ratchet game?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. They announced it back in
a Ratchet tower defense game, you say?
Color name and Hatfield interested.
Yeah, I think
this is relevant to my interests.
How was it described? It's tower defense, but you're like running around in between waves to like collect things. So it's not like Plants vs. Zombies where it's very stagnant.
It's more like Pixel Junk Monsters where you gotta run to the trees and get stuff.
A little bit like what Fortnite sounds like too, which is that like in between waves of tower defense, you're like scavenging basically. Mm. So I think it looks cool. And Sly Cooper, I think, is also cross by.
Yeah, I said that already.
I've been hearing rumors, and I haven't confirmed this yet, but that Sly Cooper's delayed until 2013.
Yeah, some kid tweeted us about that. I tweeted back at him, asked where he got it.
Other people tweeted at me too. It's that news exists somewhere, so I'll look into it.
All right. Yeah.
Colin, Sleeping Dogs is out today. Mm-hmm. You reviewed it. Mm-hmm. You gave it an 8.5.
Yes.
You think the game is great.
Yeah, it is. Recommend it's a great game.
Open world action game, Grand Theft Auto in Hong Kong. Is that a good way to describe it?
Yeah, your review turned me around on it. I'm excited.
Cool, yeah. I think it's a special game because it's not as derivative as you might think it is. I mean, I think the story, like I write in the piece, is like where it really hooks you in. Wei Shen is a detective and he's like undercover cop, and you don't really know like if he's like getting sucked into the triad that he's like trying to infiltrate, or if he's like going to be a cop. Like the story is actually very compelling, and I don't think it's as good as Saints Row the Third, and I don't think it's as good as Grand Theft Auto 4 in some ways. But I think that it's still really solid and probably the sleeper hit I think of 2012 so far.
I have not played it yet. I want to check it out. I was on the live stream, so I watched it played for 2 hours and sat there with the developer while he described it. My one concern was that he really said they were trying to go for a cool story, like an HBO drama style serious story. And you mentioned in your review that you like the story a lot. But the disconnect for me is like the combat is so ridiculous and over the top and like arcadey. And I don't have any problem with video games being arcadey, but I just like how does that contrast with trying to tell a serious story?
It's also hard to reconcile a story like that in an open world game, because like the way I play open world games is that I very rarely finish the story, and when I do, it's like the last thing I do. You know, like I just love exploring the world and doing all the side missions and stuff like that. So like for me, I worry that it'll be a little bit of what Arkham City was, which is that going on those side missions distracted me from the story. You know, it took away whatever gravitas that story was supposed to have.
Oh, good word.
Yeah, I still think, I mean, I think that's a legitimate qualm, and not something that really bothered me too much. Just because I kind of look at the story in a vacuum, and like you have to do it in like every. I mean, think about like Uncharted. Think about how great those stories are, especially Uncharted 3, which I think Greg and I agree is like the best Uncharted game, and how awesome that story is. But then like Drake is just murdering hundreds of people in between like the cutscenes, you know. So it's like
to be fair, it's in self-defense, right?
Yeah, it is. But like you know, that's like totally unrealistic. You know, that's in itself is unrealistic. He's getting shot. He heals. It's like when Bromley made that Call of Duty video with Altano and they touch the car and they heal themselves and stuff like that. It's like, you know, you got to suspend your disbelief with any video game. Even games that are trying to be totally realistic, I think, like Heavenly, or not Heavenly, I was going to say Heavenly Sword.
Heavenly Sword, totally so realistic. The sword's killing me.
Heavy Rain is what I was going to say.
Yeah, but in Sleeping Dogs, like, you're fighting in a fish market and, you know, you're an undercover cop and you can lift guys up and hang them on meat hooks and then knock them over onto a cart of swordfish heads that are sticking straight up. So they pin themselves on like, this is what the game is like.
I mean, it's
cool, but it's like.
Yeah.
There's footage in your video review of the dude, he slams a guy's head into like an air conditioning thing and like the rotor at the top is amazing.
No, you're right. I mean, I will say without spoiling it that some of the violence is explained in the story and like, he's not getting away with what you think he's getting away with. Okay. I'll just leave it at that.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, I am gonna check it out.
Yeah, you should.
It's out today. The review is up on IGN, and our guide is up too, if anyone needs help working their way through the game.
I can make it!
Put up now!
I can make it! I'm okay!
Castle Crashers is coming to Steam. 4 years after it was released on Xbox Live Arcade, 2 years after it was released on the PlayStation Network.
They're in no hurry.
I know. The behemoth developer of Castle Crashers, they work slowly.
Damon, how do they do this?
This
how
is
do
what
they
I wonder.
Stay in business?
This is
no
what I wonder.
No offense to the behemoth, you make good games.
Because they're working on Battle Block Theater, right?
Yeah.
This is the follow-up to Castle Crashers, which isn't out 4 years after Castle Crashers, has no release date. It was announced in January 2009.
We've played it at every PAX.
And every Comic-Con, like it's just always there in that their big arcade setup.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Castle Crashers sold very well. It sold like a million copies just on Xbox Live Arcade alone, right?
Yeah.
More on PlayStation Network. So, and they're a small team, so I guess they made enough money to just take their
they
time.
They do a lot with merch too. I don't know how
that's
much
true.
They do a lot of merch.
But so that definitely helps augment their income a lot.
Decided, you know
but the fact that this is coming to Steam way later is, I don't know. Like at this point,
I was going to ask you to review the excitement around this announcement that it's coming to Steam, because there's not even a release date on Steam. They just announced today that it's coming to Steam.
I don't
2 years more.
Yeah, I honestly don't care because I've already played it on Xbox. Like, yeah. I've gone through it and I've done it with my friends and now I'm just kind of over it. I guess if you never played it, cool. Like, good for you, but...
Oh, good for you!
Where you been?
I mean, people love that game. But yeah, how many people on PC like didn't play it already?
Yeah, I mean, probably few and far between. But I'm sure it'll probably still sell pretty well.
It'll be a game. I'll buy it when it's on a Steam sale for $2.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. Or never, because we'll die before it comes out.
I know. The Steam version will have voice chat, Steam achievements, gamepad support, Steam Cloud support, plus local and online multiplayer. So all that good stuff. Mm. What about BattleBlock Theater? Is anybody interested? I feel like, for me personally, it's taken too long, and now I've like...
Yeah, well, that's the whole thing. We played it how many years ago? I don't even remember what it is, but I remember I played it, and I enjoyed it, and I wrote about it at PAX, but now I have no idea what that game is
Honestly,
anymore.
That game, I think, is going to be at PAX again this year. Like, it's not even, to me, worth writing about.
Oh, no.
Because that was like the type of game that should have had a 1 year cycle, maybe. It was shown and then it came out six months later.
It's a mini game collection.
It is. And why is it taking so long?
Like, but it could literally. Be, I mean, who knows? Like, it could be, maybe it'll come out and be great, like Fez. Like,
sure.
You know, you don't
sure,
know.
It's just I don't care anymore.
But yeah. I feel like there is like a certain amount of time when a game has been in development that it's too long and I just no longer am interested in following it anymore. I'm trying to figure out exactly how long that is because Dust, an Elysian Tale, just came out on Xbox Live Arcade and I was following that game years and years ago. Like, granted, that was like one guy that made that game. So, but still, I feel like there is a certain amount of time where I lose interest in following a game.
Now, are we being elitists because we know everything and we're exposed to this?
I'm not trying to. I'm just...
No, I know. I'm not saying you're elitist. But... He's just a little bit, just a little elitist. He's a little guy. But it's one of those things, like, to the general consumer who probably doesn't even know about BattleBlock Theater, doesn't see the PAX every time they go to PAX. I mean, you think there's a difference there that it's going to come out and it's going to say, from the makers of Castle Crashers, and they're going to be like, oh, man.
Instead of being elitist, I think it's just, it depends on how closely you follow the industry, right?
Sure. I mean, I think the difference is, I think at this point, I think Damon's completely fair to not follow development anymore. Like, you don't know, it's another year, it's at another PAX, you don't need to keep an eye on what that game's up to. But then you tune back in when it comes out. You say, okay, well, how did it turn out, you know?
Yeah.
And if it turned out awesome, then you buy it and love it. And if it didn't, then, you know, okay, fair enough. I keep touching your knee.
Yeah, I know, the hand, you're into the hand motions.
What's on your wrist, Greg?
I got my Madden wristband. Okay. For, like, you know, if I'm calling plays out in the real world, it's...
In the real world, yes.
That's how, you know, a quarterback would wear this in real world and flip it up and he'd get the play and he'd check his play and then he'd go and he'd hike the ball. And then so in Madden this year, it came with my Madden review copy. It's got all my Kinect commands on it here.
It looks like it's going to be a pre-order bonus too, because I see a little bit
games,
of GameStop.
It says GameStop on the front of it. Yeah. So I can look at this. If I forgot how to hike the ball, I say, General, hike. Oh, okay.
You can wipe the shame off your fat face along with the sweat.
Oh, I have no shame. I like it. I've been wearing it around the office all week for no reason. And it also, I was trying to explain to Altano what it was, and he had no idea what I was saying because I was talking about football. But it also looks like the Buzz Lightyear one.
Yeah,
that's
true.
Their Buzz Lightyear colors.
That's true.
Yeah, it's the colors of Buzz Lightyear too.
I never put together that Kinect
command
colors are Buzz Lightyear colors.
You can call Star Command.
Yeah, that's the one.
You have a bunch of Madden stuff coming up next week, don't you?
Yeah, big Madden week next week. We got a live stream. Mm-hmm. We got a review. Mm-hmm. They're going to be filming Up at Noon. They won't be on Up at... Oh, I think maybe we're putting Up at Noon up on Friday. I forget.
Anyway.
A lot of Madden stuff next week. If you like Madden, park it at IGN.com. Tailgating fans.
The exploration, puzzle solving, and combat combine to create an enthralling adventure. For more on Horn, check out IGN.com.
Justin, there's this new iOS game. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's called Horn.
I have.
It's supposed to be amazing, is what I hear.
I saw somebody tweeted today that if you're a hardcore gamer, this is the iOS game you've been waiting for. I think it was...
Some guy, some Yahoo, tweeted that out.
Probably Will Powers.
Anyway, yeah, you reviewed Horn.
Horn is super
iOS.
Good. So, you know, Damon and I, something that you and I discuss is that we're not super wild about virtual buttons or virtual joysticks in games.
They're kind of a deal breaker for me.
Right.
Like girls who smoke.
Well, yeah.
But if she smokes, she pokes.
Is that a what? What does that mean?
It's a Family Guy reference, and what do you think it means?
She pokes me?
No, I don't want to.
I don't want to be poked. Anyway.
You're just facepalming over there. Yeah, so, you know, virtual D-pads, I feel like it's not as much of a deal breaker for me as it is for you. I've played some games like League of Evil that I think control really well with, like, virtual buttons, but I think it's lazy. I think they take a game, like Gameloft's Batman game, for example.
Batman?
And they just copy, they say, here's the console controls, let's just slap them onto a touchscreen, and that's it. And what excited me about Horn was it's not that. It's built from the ground up for, you know, touch control in mind. So it's a third-person action adventure. It's kind of Zelda-ish. When you go into combat, it's a little bit more like Infinity Blade. You can dodge left and right and sort of slash the screen to attack enemies. But you can actually move around. You can actually, it's sort of this open, it's not an open world, it's level-based, but you can sort of tap to run somewhere, tap a ledge to jump to that ledge. And it's all like context sensitive. So if you're like shimmying along like a tight ledge, you can swipe left and right to like sort of move and not fall off the ledge. And it's really cool. It's sort of the first, there have been other 3D games that were built sort of from the ground up with touch controls in mind, but this one
Infinity
works.
Blade?
Yeah, but Infinity or? Blade, there's no movement, right? Like you just sort of tap
you're on
points.
Rails.
Yeah, you're on rails. Okay. And this one's an actual sort of like you can go explore caves and like, oh, you know, there's a dock. What's at the end of it? And you can sort of walk out on it. And they do it without, you know, virtual buttons and without like a virtual D-pad.
It sounds very cool. So what's the flow of gameplay? If it's like Zelda, then you explore, you find a dungeon, you figure out, solve puzzles in the dungeon, then you fight a boss.
Sure. So it's not really like that. There's a hub world, and then it branches off into sort of branching missions. And they're fairly short. They're, I would say, 20 minutes long as each individual level. And it's not like this is some big open world that you can explore. It's still sort of linear, like within the level. You're going from point A to B to C. Like you solve this puzzle, then you fight this dude, then you solve this puzzle. But there's some, like you can go off the beaten path a little bit to like find some treasure or, you know, discover some secrets or that sort of thing. And game looks absolutely gorgeous. I don't know how the wizards at Phosphor Games are doing, you know. Yeah, the wizards at Phosphor are doing. Like their last game looked gorgeous too, but it didn't play as good as this. So this is sort of the complete package of, you know, controls well, plays well. The voice acting is actually really, really good. The story's interesting. Gameplay's good. The puzzles are very, like if you're a hardcore gamer, if you've played a lot of Zelda games, they're gonna be easy for you. Like none of them really stumped me. The combat's stronger. Like it's really varied and has a lot of variety to it. And the game's, I was really, really impressed. I gave it a 9 out of 10. It lost some points for being a little bit repetitive, but otherwise there's really not much I don't like about it.
Now, I take umbrage with some of the language you use when you talk about the game.
Okay.
You're really stressing that this is like a game that hardcore gamers should pay attention to. And can't we be done like classifying gamers as like hardcore and or anything else? Or
well, I mean, you see the comments that I get. Whenever I write anything that mentions iPhone, the comments are like, oh, these baby games. Will you stop reviewing these baby games, IGN? Like, that's the sort of thing I get. And so, I know. And I'm getting all defensive now and angry about it.
Just let it out.
And, I mean, that's just ignorance, though, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, iPhone is a platform like anything else. Like, there is stuff for, you know, young kids. There's stuff for casual gamers. There's stuff for hardcore gamers. And I'm not really wild about the term hardcore gamer either, but it's a shorthand. Like, when you say that, people kind of understand what you're talking about, what type of game you're
talking about. I think we've talked about this before on GameScoop especially, but I think, especially for Justin right now, I think, it's kind of like a bat signal, if you will, or like a flare to say, hey, people who usually ignore whatever I put up, or you know, if you never pay attention to iPhone games and you only play your 360 or PC, come look at this. This is something you might be into.
You don't think that just perpetuates the stereotype that iPhone games are like aren't real games or something?
I mean, what do you have to do? You have to get those people through the door to change their minds.
I mean, it's not something that I spend a lot of time thinking about, honestly. You know,
me
I think.
Damon do.
I think iPhone is very different.
I call Greg at night. Greg,
it's 3:30 in the morning.
Hardcore.
What's going on, Jason?
I've been thinking more about what defines a hardcore game.
If you go to Metacritic, if you look at like the top 20 best reviewed recent games, they're virtually all iOS games. Now, I don't know if that's just because there are so many more of those coming out.
They are, I think. You know, a lot of my peers that, you know, there's a handful of sites springing up that cover only iPhone games, and I think a lot of them are way too generous with how they score things. You know, if it's like decent and kind of fun, they're like, oh, 5 out of 5, you know? So, but that aside, I mean, not every gamer is like you and me and sort of like, I'll play a very casual puzzle game, then I'll go play a shooter, then I'll go play, you know, a Japanese action game. Like, I have very eclectic, wide-ranging tastes, and some gamers don't. They kind of just want the really high fidelity, high impact, you know, in-depth titles. And I'm playing a game called Puzzlecraft that's great. You know, it's just as good as Horn, but But it's the difference between night and day. It's very, very casual and simple and easy. And so, you know, labeling something as hardcore is a way to sort of get some people to pay attention that maybe wouldn't otherwise. It doesn't mean that it's better or anything like that. It's just, you know, some people don't want that casual stuff.
What do you think, Anthony?
I think Horn looks like a cool game. Primarily, like, you know, the idea that there are like hardcore games and stuff, I get that. Like, there are certain people that those are the experiences they still want on iOS. To me, those are like the type of experiences that I take when they're really good, but that's not what I want when I'm playing on iOS mostly. Like, I still love things that I can play in really short bursts. And it sounds like you can do that to a degree with Horn as well. But things like Gasket Ball.
You like Gasket Ball.
Gasket Ball's great.
Gasket Ball's fantastic.
I've been checking out Gasket
Ball. I gave him $3, the creator of that $3, or the creators of $3, because even though they've like had over like 200,000 downloads, they're like broke. Like, they don't have any money.
It's free. The game is free.
Right, but you can unlock the full version for $3 from within the app.
Oh, okay.
So
yeah, and their conversion rate, like normally the expectation is like 1-2% of people that download your app will pay for it in that model, and they're seeing a lot lower percentage.
Yeah, probably because they give too much for free.
Yeah, maybe. They're too generous and it's hurting them.
So, but yeah, I mean, things like that, and you know, but to me the iOS device, it's funny, I was talking to someone about this, that, you know, despite having like a computer in your pocket that's like more connected than ever, you know, in theory, like, well, soon we could play like a Call of Duty style shooter or something that's online.
Yeah.
I have no interest in that though. Like, for me, most of the time when I play, even though it's always online, I don't want to play a multiplayer where we have to be online at the same time. Asynchronous is still where it's at. Like,
I agree.
It is like, yeah, where that type of multiplayer persists. You know, I'm finally getting to Hero Academy. I'm way late on that. But it's awesome. And it's awesome because of that, because of asynchronous multiplayer. Gasket Ball as well has asynchronous multiplayer that like makes a world of difference.
Yep. I have a folder on my phone of all my asynchronous multiplayer games. So it's, you know, all the obvious like Words with Friends stuff, also Ticket to Ride, also Gasket Ball now. Like, there's becoming a lot more variety in the category. People are understanding that that's how people want to play these mobile games. Game developers are figuring that out, that it lets people fit it into their
schedule.
Life.
Yeah, that's the hard part, is that most of the time when you pull out your iPhone to play games, you're not pulling it out because you're sitting down being like, time to play some games. You're like, oh, I have time to kill.
Unless I'm on a plane or something.
Sure. So that's the time when I'll probably save Horn, honestly, for when I have like a good lengthy trip and be like, all right, now I'm gonna dive into this.
So. It's good. And I will say, like, for people in this room and for, you know, maybe a lot of people that are watching or listening, Horn is, I mean, the puzzles are easy if you've been playing games for a long time. Like, you'll see it's all the same stuff you've seen in Zelda games before. And I mentioned that in my review. The puzzles are a little disappointing. But the whole package comes together like in a really, really nice way, and you know, the combat kind of makes up for the weak puzzles a little bit. And what excites me the most about this is the game itself is awesome, but it shows potential for, you know, where mobile can go. This game's not open world, but you can obviously see how they could do an open world game with these same controls, this same sort of style and presentation. And it's just it's a big step in the right direction, and I think people need to reward that.
Greg, are you gonna check out Horn?
Probably not.
Yeah.
Sorry. I mean, it sounds great. It sounds cool. I don't iPhone game. I don't iOS game all that much. And so I've run into this before. We talk about a game and how great it is, and I'm like, all right, cool. And I buy it, and then I never play it. And I like sit there, and I look at Jetpack Joyride.
I mean, there's plenty of things on your own platform you're not going to play.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so. Yeah. Or any platform.
Yeah. I'm just saying, do you plan on playing Papo EO?
Yeah, I'll try it.
See?
Yeah. You didn't like it? Or no, Mitch didn't like it.
Justin, you mentioned League of Evil.
Uh-huh.
One of our viewers, Noah, writes in asking if you've heard of a game called Random Heroes.
Yeah, game came out today.
Apparently by the guys that made League of Evil.
It's a little bit like League of Evil, but you have guns. It's more like Mega Man style rather than League of Evil's like a pure platformer.
Okay.
That is one of the best examples of virtual buttons that are done pretty well, though.
Right.
League of Evil? Or?
Yeah.
So that's why, unlike, you know, Damon, if a game has virtual buttons, you're kind of not into it. You're kind of done. And I'm not that way, because sort of the devil's in the details with these things, where most games with virtual buttons don't feel that great. You miss buttons, you're missing jumps.
Yeah.
But, you know, that game does it well. I think it's probably the best 2D game, that and Most Efron, what's it called?
Most Efron sounds cool.
And those guys do a good job of, like, integrating it. Like, I don't know if the new one's integrated with it, but the League of Evil at least works with, like, the iCade thing and stuff.
Great iCade support.
So.
Buongiorno. Can I have a mass room, please?
Colin, what were you saying about Dragon's Dogma?
It's good.
Yeah, it is good, right?
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, I think that's exactly how IGN reviewed it, a 7.5.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah, it's good.
Are you enjoying it?
I enjoyed it back when it came out and I played it. Okay. I was like, oh yeah, this is fun. And I never returned to it.
This is one of these games that came out and he's like, oh, I'm enjoying Dragon's Dogma. I'm like, is that the one that everybody says is a cutscene? He's like, no, I don't even know what game. And I'm like, is that Azura's Wrath? And he's like, I don't know.
Azura's Wrath
is
the cutscene. I can't keep those straight. It's impossible. They're the same game.
No, the game couldn't be more different.
In terms of us not caring, and they both came out at one point.
They're both Capcom games. Too.
That's why.
Oh, there you go.
But I think they're actually both good.
Adjective, noun.
Both those games I played right when they came out, and I enjoyed them. But then I got distracted and never returned to them.
Gotcha.
Asura's Wrath is good. It's it's a very anime style cutscene. So if you like anime, you have to be into that sort of stuff.
Sure.
I don't know if Greg Miller would be into it.
I like anime once in a while. I bought that Ghostbusters manga. I liked that a lot.
Manga.
Manga. I read Puri Puri. That was a manga. And I watched Howl's Moving Castle once.
That guy on your desk used to have like horny teenager. Manga.
Oh yeah, but that's Puri Puri. Oh, okay, that was Puri Puri. That's one I liked. See, McCaffrey, if you're not familiar, there's like this 13-year-old guy who wants to be a priest, but they don't want him to be a priest for some reason, so they put him into the all-girls school, and then he gets into hilarious hijinks. Mm-hmm. And there's this one girl he's like in love with that I hope he leaves the priesthood for, but he always gets in these embarrassing naked situations with her.
Who am I working with?
You haven't figured this out by now. Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Hello.
Listeners, remember you can always reach us at gamescoop@ign.com, just like Ty Blue did.
That's a good name.
Any relation to Ty Root?
Yeah,
I guess not. They don't.
That's how it goes.
Hey, first name, if you have the same first name.
No, it's like in Texas, it's kind of like Japan, where you put like the family name goes front, Ty.
Ty says, I'm jumping into Mass Effect from the second in the series. Fill me in on what happened in the first game.
Play it on PS3, you get the comic, and you're all filled in.
The best stuff happened in the first game?
No, all the really boring space stuff happened in the first game.
All the role-playing happened in the first game, I'll tell you that much.
That is true.
You're introduced to Shepard. Actually, the best part of the first game is you become a Spectre. Shepard, it's the first third of the game or so is actually... Miller.
Yeah, it's such a big deal an hour and a half in when you get to become a Spectre, which you have no idea what that is. And
I know
you've selected that you were Earthborn and the Soul Survivor, and that doesn't even really matter. You get to know this character. No, you don't.
So you do eventually get to shoot aliens.
Yes,
there's a really cool part where you get to... you get to prove yourself and become the first human Spectre and stand in front of the council and become anointed as a Spectre, where you basically, you get to become Space Cop with no, like Judge Dredd, basically, minus the, with a better accent.
That's pretty much the arc of the...
Well, that's the first part. And then it's just, it gets into you got the best bad guy, Saren, in the first Mass Effect. The last act of that game, like the last couple hours, it's about, 30-hour game, a little more if you want to do everything, but the last couple hours, they throw some major story twists at you, and you're just like, oh my god, what just happened here? And then, man, the second one, PlayStation
crazy.
Got involved...
You're starting to sound crazy, because Mass Effect 2 is amazing.
Well, as an action game,
So what? What it is.
But the ending, too, is like, there's a giant Terminator
that makes awesome noises.
That I will admit that was the stupidest thing. Spoilers for this kid wondering about if he should play Mass Effect 2. But yeah, you go in, there's a giant robot baby standing there. You're like,
Yeah.
All right. Done. This mission wasn't too suicidal.
Mass Effect 2 and 3 are a lot, technically they're a lot more polished and the combat's smoother, but the story, the actual, and supposedly we're supposed to play Mass Effect for the story.
You get it all in the comic, get it all boiled down. Save the spider people, don't save the spider
people. The role-playing in the story is far and away at its best in the first game. Absolutely worth playing. It's my favorite of the three.
Call them Mass Effect 1 or 2.
I think they get better as they go.
Each one?
Yeah. I think I agree that the Mass Effect's emphasis on role-playing should have never been removed. Like the role-playing elements, as we like to sometimes call them, should have never been removed because I think they did that to make the game more accessible. And I also agree the story in the original Mass Effect's awesome.
I did like about original Mass Effect that you would talk to people and you'd get experience points. Mm. I think I might have bitched about that when we first talked about Mass Effect 8 years ago or whatever, but when they took it away in Mass Effect 2, it was like, oh.
Yeah, but I disagree. I think Harbinger is still the best bad guy in Mass Effect. And
assuming control.
He's just because he's awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
He's so awesome. And because he just appears in most of the battles. He's just taking people's bodies over and you kind of see them
That is.
You're a punk. take these people over, I shoot you dead.
So I think Mass Effect 2 and Mass Effect 3 are
comparable in quality to each other. I still prefer Mass Effect 3.
Three is the culmination. The melding of yeah. 1 and 2, which it is a great game, absolutely.
But, you know, play them all.
Another question about Mass Effect. Nathaniel Hlavin asks, he says, I was wondering if
does he need to buy a vowel?
Yeah, he does.
Is that what's going on?
I was wondering if there was any indication whether or not there would be another game set in the Mass Effect universe. If you don't know, what are your thoughts? Doesn't a game universe that well done deserve more games?
There'll definitely be another Mass Effect game.
Absolutely.
EA is a public company. This will happen. There's no doubt about it.
Everyone's going to bitch that they're just making another one, and then you're all going to buy it.
Well, everyone will bitch about anything anyway. I think the new Mass Effect game will be a prequel.
Mass Effect, Jax Chronicles.
I think I wrote a piece actually.
No,
I don't like Jax.
There'll be a GI.
There'll
be a GI Jane like scene in the middle where she shaves her head.
Yeah,
I purposely didn't do her loyalty mission, so she.
Her mission
die.
Was the best mission. It was like X-Men.
She's a weird character. I think that it would be cool to just go back. I wrote a piece about this on IGN, and people can read about it. I had 5 ideas for prequels and how they can do it. And I think the coolest idea would be to go way back and to when humans first found the Prothean ruins on Mars and what that meant on Earth, and like maybe corporations are competing for the rights to find the ruins or whatever. So almost like a Deus Ex type game in terms of story, in which like it's about like humans figuring out for the first time that they're not alone. I think would be awesome. And of course going to Pluto and finding the Sharon Mass Relay could be another whole story.
What are the chances of a Mass Effect free-to-play MMO?
By the way, EA talks about free-to-play games, good.
Well, but they did just get burned pretty bad on The Old Republic.
They're going free-to-play.
I guess it'll all depend on the economics.
I figure balls are in motion.
Balls are definitely in motion.
If they were getting ready for a Mass Effect MMO free-to-play, it would already be in some kind of development, right?
Sure.
So it's, how much money have they invested? Maybe they don't pull out. When balls are in motion, it's hard to pull out.
It's not that hard.
All right, switching gears to The Walking Dead.
Oh, yes.
This is Spencer Galloway. He says, So I just got episodes 1 and 2 of The Walking Dead from PlayStation Plus.
Free!
Pretty sure that I'll be buying the others when they come out. My question is, should I go ahead and play the first 2 now or wait until they're all out, play through them all at once?
It's all up to you, Spencer. Like,
it is a thing because my girlfriend and I played through 1 and 2 and we loved it. And now we're like, now we gotta wait for the 3rd one, which still doesn't have a release date. We're supposed to be coming soon.
Yeah, they're still on target for this month. So they're hoping somewhere in the end of the month before August is out here.
So it is a little frustrating that you can't just continue it, but then it's like, if you're gonna wait, who knows when all 5 of them are gonna be out.
Yeah. It's a lot like TV shows, right?
Exactly.
Like, it's one of those things Netflix now, like, I caught up on Mad Men and Breaking Bad, and like, I was so into those shows, and I felt like I was so engrossed in those universes, and then it ended. And then it was like, and I had to wait months to get to the next one. And now you watch them weekly, and like, this sucks.
And there's and it's like, God.
Why didn't I just wait till everything?
I've been binging on HBO Go lately.
It's so good.
And that is the best way to watch.
But there
is something to be said with Walking Dead, where I think they're the perfect, they last the perfect amount of time. They're like, the first one took me about 2 hours, second one about 2.5. Did them both in one sitting each.
Yep.
Whereas if you wait till they're all out, then, you know, do you just go on a binge overdose and just string yourself out on all 5 episodes at once? Or
it's one of those things, it's also up to him how many times he wants to play it. Like, that's the big thing for me, is like, I really dig the games, obviously. I review them and review them well because they're so good. And then when I'm done with my first playthrough, I immediately jump back in and go and do the different choices. And so now I have all these different saves that are branching out in different paths. And while I like that a lot and it gives me a reason to keep playing them, kind of be engaged, waiting for the next episode, it would be cool, I think, that when they're all out, I'm going to stop and start again from the very beginning and play through and, you know, stick with, this is my real character, this is my real choice. I wouldn't mind, I don't think, sitting, waiting and, you know, if I could, and do it all at once. And then, even then, when I'm done with that, come back and do it, you know, a different way. Make lead
a
jerk.
It's a trade-off, because if you wait and you play through them all at once, I think that's the best way to consume, at least with television, that's the best way to consume television today. But if you watch them as they're airing week by week, then you get to be a part of the conversation.
True.
With everybody.
Very
on Monday
true.
Morning,
very, very
you get to
true.
Talk about Breaking Bad.
And you know, I think playing them 1 at a time, as we're doing now, you get more time to digest each one and really think about it. Whereas I think if you wait till they're all out, it'll sort of all be a blur. I'm sure it'll be a great ride if you just go do all 5 in a week or something. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we come into the office the next day, as you're saying, Damon, and just like, what did you do? How'd you do this? Mm-hmm. Who'd you save?
And the good thing about them is I don't think that any of them so far really end on a cliffhanger. They're self-contained stories in the Walking Dead universe, right? Like there's a tease at the end of 2 about like something that might be coming. And there's at the end of one, all the lights go out. And you're
I know, which they don't, well, spoilers, but they don't really follow up on that.
But they don't need to, right? I mean,
well,
like,
I thought they were. I thought they were setting something up, but then
I think it's just them showing that everything's going to hell in a handbasket.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Like, you know, you get these little stories of how bad everything is right now, and then you jump back and see what's happening.
The games are very good.
Yeah.
Everyone should play them.
Wily! My robots deny the controls of Earl as soon as they get rid of that blue dweeb Mega Man and his Robo Dog Rush! Bomb Man, make sure they have a blast! What? Mega Man's taking over the bomb? Good Man, watch out! Mega Man can use your own power against you just like that! Okay, Mega Man, can you stop Proto Man and Guts Man at the same time? I don't think so.
Mega Man, collect them all from Bandai!
Colin, this is a question about Mega Man.
Oh, okay.
Do you know anything about Mega Man?
I know a thing or two about Mega Man.
This is Adicio Martinez. Mega Man is turning 25 in December. Did we know this?
December 17th, yep.
It seems like Capcom doesn't really care. I would love to see a compilation comparable to the Street Fighter Anniversary Collector's Set with the entire catalog on Xbox Live or PSN with achievements and trophies, but that seems highly unlikely. Is the Blue Bomber still profitable, or am I seeing a demand that doesn't exist?
Yeah, the Blue Bomber is profitable for sure. Capcom has said, you know, on the record that Mega Man 9 and Mega Man 10 were both profitable games. And those games are obviously not made really for...
Now, those are 8-bit games, mm-hmm. so they...
Hopefully. Yeah, right? Hopefully they are profitable.
It costs $12 and one for the developers.
I wouldn't underestimate how much money those games cost to make, and the fact that a really good studio made them. Because those weren't internal Capcom games. Any creates made those games, and that's a studio that also made, you know, the Mega Man Zero games and stuff like that. Like, those are really good games, so... That was probably an awesome project for them to, like, especially for newer developers to go back and use old school tools. But that's mm-hmm. that's an aside. Mega Man, my theory has always been and will continue to be that Capcom has it out for Keiji Inafune and that they have no intention of respecting Mega Man, and at least now. And now if we're gonna see a new Mega Man game, a real new Mega Man game, that they will reboot Mega Man, and it will be called Mega Man, and it will be like something like maybe an open world, almost like Mega Man Legends type game, I think. That's my theory. I think that it's pretty clear that they have it out for Inafune, considering they canceled Mega Man Legends 3 when the game was running, and they canceled Mega Man Universe, and Clements played Mega Man Universe. Like, that game was, like, on its way to being finished. So I don't understand why they would do something like that.
They did the public slight of putting not the real Mega Man into whichever fighting game.
Tekken, or Street Fighter Cross Tekken has...
I think that's a slight. I think that's cool.
The word on that was that Inafune signed off on that. I mean, not that he had to, he doesn't own the character, but, that was okay with him. I don't know if that's true or not. It was funny. I didn't take that like super personally, but as a Mega Man fan,
you heard it here first. Capcom just poking into Inafune.
See, I think Capcom and Konami are in the
if
same
she
boat with
poke. She smoke. Yeah. Oh, no, the other way. Yeah,
yeah. If she pokes, she smokes.
I don't know what that means. But I think Capcom and Konami are in the same boat with two of their old school franchises, in which they could annualize Mega Man. Basically just make Mega Man 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, release those games every year in 8-bit form, probably make money on them. Castlevania can do the same thing with the Symphony of the Night style Castlevania games that were on GBA and DS, and for some reason they just totally abandoned that as well. So, but I think that they probably have something planned for 25th anniversary, which is December 17th. That's when Mega Man came to Famicom in 1987. But, you know, I don't know. They announced that free-to-play iOS game that's like a role-playing game or something. Yeah, it's called Mega Man Crossover, I think, and... I don't know who the fuck wants to play that, but, you know, to each his own. But I'm with him in that, you know, we need a new Mega Man 11, we need a new Mega Man X game, which I think is the most requested game. People want Mega Man Legends 3, they almost had it. So it's sad. Mega Man's in a sad state of disrepair right now.
It's interesting that you say that you think Capcom's got it out for him. I had a unique opportunity to sit down with Inafune at GDC this year and ask him straight up, you know, what would you think if they did one without you? And, you know, maybe he was just being respectful and humble, but he said he left behind a lot of really great talent, you know, a lot of people he really respects there, and he would love to see what they would do without him.
Yeah, I think that he's going to find out one way or the other. I mean, I think that...
Regardless of his intentions.
I don't know, I want to see what they... Like, Mega Man has great potential, because could you imagine a gritty, almost open-world Mega Man game in which... Like,
no, you're describing every gamer's worst nightmare
No, but think about... I mean, you wouldn't find a bigger Mega Man fan in the entire fucking world than me. And like, I'm totally open to them trying something different if they try something cool, because the idea behind Mega Man about like a crazy scientist making robots and trying to take over the world, destroy things, whatever, like that could actually fit in a world that is not comical. And it's a matter of like how they do something like that. Mega Man X was almost a step in that direction, because Mega Man X was a little bit more serious.
And somber, because you were like finding like Dr. Light's little capsules and he was talking to you after he died and stuff like that. Like it took like a more...
Did you get choked up?
A little bit.
Christopher Nolan's Mega Man Begins.
So my theory, a Mega Man reboot called Mega Man will come out. And
I can see that happening. Yeah. My thought would be that there are hardcore Mega Man fans out there like yourself, but there aren't enough of them to sell the millions of copies that Capcom would like to sell.
They tried this with Bionic Commando, too.
Ooh. Yeah, that's true, but Bionic Commando is not nearly and never was as big as Mega Man. And right. So, you know, I agree with you that, like, it seems like it's almost like, it's like an Activision thing where they want to either, you know, sell a lot of games or not try at all, as opposed to maybe just making a little bit of a profit. But the fact that Capcom outsourced to a second party to make Mega Man 9 and 10 and still made money indicates that those games sold pretty well. And, you know, in my heart, I hope we get Mega Man 11 in an 8-bit form.
This is Peter Zagraficus.
That's a good name.
Sounds like an alien.
Good read.
Alien name, I think.
He just made it up when he came to Earth.
My name is Peter. Been a huge fan of IGN for years. I'm as big of a nerd as any one of you there. Okay, Peter. Won't argue.
Sounds like what an alien would say.
My question for you is, will we ever see Conker's Bad Fur Day again? It was and still is one of my favorite games. The transfer to the original Xbox was great, but I feel the multiplayer was just not the same as its N64 version. I don't know about you guys, but an exact revamp of the original would make me really excited.
I agree with you completely on the remake for Xbox. It was a beautiful game, well put together, but Microsoft got out of the mascot platformer business a long time ago.
He wants a revamp of the original, and Microsoft has brought Perfect Dark and Banjo-Kazooie and Banjo-Tooie all to Xbox Live Arcade. They could do that with Conker's Bad Fur Day, too.
That could happen. I mean, I think they tried it on Xbox One, and I think it's even backwards compatible, so if you did want to go dig it up, I mean, obviously he owns it already, but yeah, everybody that really made Rare is long, long gone at this point.
That's true.
And Rare seems to be a factory for avatars and avatar games like Kinect Sports. They don't seem to have any interest in bringing back their old beloved characters. So I'm not holding my breath for that one at all.
Conker's Bad Fur Day was such a weird game when it was released. I mean, it was awesome. I love that it was released on the Nintendo 64.
Yeah, exactly. It was so anti, you know, Nintendo as far as what you expect from a Nintendo console.
Poor Rare. What a story of just taking buying a company at its height and just destroying it. Just absolutely destroying it. It's really, really sad.
Was it its height? I don't know if it was its height.
Well, I think that it's coming off its the N64 era. It's been making games since the NES era. So, like, yes. I think it was like on a trajectory after the N64 era to fucking go through the roof.
I feel like but that was its height, because then on GameCube they were making Star Fox Adventures.
Yeah, Star Fox Adventures wasn't supposed to be a Star Fox game.
Gemini, I know. To be fair.
The Stamper Brothers are the ones laughing all the way to the bank. They're on a tropical island somewhere sipping fruity drinks with an umbrella. Like,
I understand why.
Oh, what? Kinect Sports? Whatever.
I understand why people are mad. Like, a lot of people are very passionately mad about what happened to Rare, and I get that. Yeah, you know, I totally get it because they were awesome. Also, you should go play the Rare Classic Anticipation on NES because it's rad.
It's also
a board game.
Yeah, I used to love that game when I was a kid.
It is worth noting though that their Xbox output has actually been pretty good. The Banjo games were pretty good. Cameo gets a lot of hate. I really thought it was a great launch title. Perfect Dark was not the horrible game. It was just okay. It wasn't the killer app. Yeah, Zero was not the killer app that everybody wanted. And the one I'm leaving out, Viva Pinata.
Oh yeah,
was a really good game. And it was, you know, they tried to blow it up into this huge IP. They had a Saturday morning cartoon for like 5 minutes, and that just didn't work. But you know, they've done some good stuff, but unfortunately, lately, it's all been Kinect Sports and avatars.
Yeah. Money. I get it.
Dollar bill, y'all.
Yeah, exactly. $3 bill, y'all.
Well, I think we got a long way to recoup that $325 million purchase price.
Yeah.
Still a long way to go.
That's all the scoops we have for you this week. Thanks for tuning in. Remember, you can always reach us at gamescoop@ign.com. My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop, and we're out.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.